again, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTG Cast Network. This is episode 511 of Monday Night Magic here on the MTG Cast Network. It feels weird to not follow it up with that. That's weird.
It does. Yeah. It would be like saying Atomic Empire.
Without following up with in Durham, North Carolina.
In Durham, North Carolina. It's a great shop. You should check it out. Yeah, it would be exactly like that.
It just feels...
It feels just unfinished.
Yeah. You know, like Magic Online. Oh, I'm sorry.
Magic Online's been finished many times.
Sick burn. So I am Chewy, of course.
Of course.
Failing miserably at knowing just exactly what is going on. I am joined, as always, or as nearly always, by Clues and Squee.
Yay.
I just wanted to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
Thank you, Mr. Nielsen.
If you don't make two more throwback references to that during this episode, you're going to disappoint a lot of people.
They may have to listen all the way through the end closing. We do a closing song now, right? There's a song at the end.
Sure, yeah.
I thought you started doing that.
Yeah.
Well, they may have to listen through that, but...
Oh, okay. Look, I'm not doing any extra editing, so... So,
hey, look, magic.
There was, yeah, we've been on this call for way too long to have not actually started yet. So, the first news is, of course, the big news. Last week we had Craig Wesko on.
We did.
To be level-headed about the, platinum pay cut and all of that. And he said that he hoped that they would back it up and make it apply to the next season. And we said they almost certainly will. And of course, mere hours after that episode went live, well, they did.
Yay.
We are claiming a causal connection, because if the media can do that with everything else, so can we.
Yup. See? You have a Platinum Pro on Monday Night Magic, stuff gets done.
That's right.
The week we don't have a Platinum Pro, you're all getting a pay cut.
Yeah, but that's also probably right. Hey, could I take a minute and say that there were some things I said last week that apparently were somewhat misconstrued. So I did make some comments about Magic players' propensity to, whenever there's anything, to simply grab the pitchforks and suggest that we just burn everything. I didn't mean that the response to this particular change was unwarranted, because I agreed with the outrage with this particular change when the original one where they tried to, you know, slash everything midstream. I was actually behind you guys. The whole pay the pros thing, I was totally on board with that. If anything I said implied that I was not, my apologies.
Yes, we were all suitably pissed.
In my defense, I'm bad at this.
We also had to start an hour early last week, so Clues was not quite with it yet.
No, and I'm still not.
So, yeah, Elaine Bourgeot announced that, okay, so basically this is, we screwed up. Sorry we screwed up. Sorry we burned down your village. Here's some gold, which that was really funny. Did you guys see that?
I did, yes.
I don't remember who did the Good Gamery photo or Photoshop. That was pretty good. So, yeah, what they've said is platinum appearance fees will remain unchanged for the 2016-2017 season. Okay, yeah, so next season, stuff doesn't get cut like they originally announced. Okay?
Yeah, I'm with you.
And then the increase to the World Championship prize pool will remain for 2016. So even though they're not taking the money away, they're still keeping the $250,000 prize pool, which means, hey, look, there was some money that could have gone in there.
Yes, I believe this might be the rainy day fund for when bad things happen. This is how they fix it.
For when they screw it all up, they just have a large pile of gold to throw things at.
My understanding
gold
is
tokens in the next set now.
I was gonna say my understanding is that fund runs out pretty quickly. They fill it back up and then immediately have to use it again.
And then the third thing is they're gonna look at it. To quote, between now and Pro Tour Eldritch Moon in August, we will reassess plans for improving the Pro Tour and Premier play. In doing so, we will consult with members of the professional Magic community, imagine that, and take their further feedback into consideration. Wow. Like they probably should have done in the first place. So
I'll only be so critical when they acknowledge that they screwed up and are doing what they should.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have to because they shouldn't have screwed up that royally in the first place. But, you know, whatever. Wizards is getting pretty good at saying, sorry, we screwed up here lately. So this one came both quickly and concisely. And also, it doesn't actually say anything about the future other than, okay, you know the part that really pissed everyone off? Yeah, just ignore that. That didn't happen. But that's all they said.
Well, so, you can't criticize them about doing something without thinking it through and then criticize them about not rushing to do something else.
That is very true. I kind of hope that they do follow through for the previous season or for the next season after that. You know, do the pay cut and all that. So long as there's warning, that's fine. Rearrange the money all you like. That's fine. Just let people know ahead of time.
Platinum pros will now be paid in tokens. Tokens can be redeemed at the prize wall at any participating GP.
Yes. I mean, wait, no. So yeah, there you go. A mere 48 hours, less than 48 hours after the bomb dropped, they're already cleaning out the fallout. I'm very proud of them for their quick turnaround and not making us wait 2-3 weeks or till the next Pro Tour.
Somebody set us up the bomb.
Yeah. We get signal. Also, for great justice. Now, I seem to have opened links in the wrong order. So, yeah, good on them. Whatever. Shouldn't have had to do it in the first place, but, you know, we got you. Next up, Grand Prix. There were exactly one Grand Prix this weekend.
Hooray!
Someone told me it was Grand Prix, and I'm not going to call it that, because that's awful. You know, plural. Grand. What did I determine last? Last week's Grand Prix. I kind of like that.
Grand pre-release.
Yeah,
I decided to stop saying the first joke that comes to mind whenever we touch on how to pronounce these because it never works out well for me. So.
Yeah, probably not. No. So this was GP Toronto, where apparently Green White Tokens was running roughshod all over everybody.
I can completely believe that.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it.
I mean, last week we were all afraid that Bant Company was going to rule the world. And now this week, apparently, it's Green White Tokens that's going to rule the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, metagames.
Yay!
This is why you don't play chess.
But, wait, what?
Well, the metagame's always the same in chess.
Oh, that's true. I hear they're going to release an update where you get to replace two of your pawns with this other thing.
You know, yeah, it's called getting them to the end of the board.
It seems like every time they reprint chess, it's just a set full of reprints. It's
still better than the Monopoly approach of just rebranding it, but it being the same game. That's just lazy.
I really thought that 3D chess from Star Trek was going to displace regular chess, but apparently the online version is awful. I don't know.
Well, all the really hardcore people don't have arms anymore, so...
And tournaments take so long since they can only communicate their moves with flashing lights.
I mean, that last game's been going for more than 30 years.
Anyway, so Robert Lombardi won with not green-white tokens. He's playing Esper Dragons.
All right.
Dragons.
And again, this is a very similar deck to the one we've been talking about for a good long time now.
Yeah.
I mean,
so tell me again, when does Jace Friend's Prodigy rotate?
In the next rotation.
All?
Yeah, when Dragons and Origins both cycle out, he will go with it because he's in Origins.
Right.
Yeah, when Return to New Place comes out.
Yeah, and since I was going to say, and since they saw fit to not actually tell us what the new set would be at PAX East because they didn't show up.
I appreciate them not nerfing the hype for the next set like they did the last time we were in Innistrad.
Okay, but look, we had a good tradition going there. What we do is we let you get really excited about
excitement for Avacyn
just
Restored.
One set.
And all that excitement of, hey, look, Avacyn Restored. Just kidding, Return to Ravnica.
We shift everything off to the next block, not the set that we want to sell you in like a month. So
makes perfect sense. Wait.
It does.
So anyway, Esper Dragons, it's, like I said, it's the deck that we've been talking about for a long time. This one has some Kalitas in it.
And
Kalitas and some lands, of course, from what are we calling these? They're just Shadows lands?
I think that's what they've been calling them.
Oh, that's too bad.
Sure.
I mean, we can come up with some stuff. Like, we could call them the Choked Lands, but...
I need a creature land that has shadow so that we can displace that just to make it more confusing.
Let's never print anything with shadow ever again.
I agree.
How about with flanking? Can I give it flanking?
Flanking is
only
fine.
Maybe you also give it horsemanship.
Okay, well, of course. No half measures.
I hate you guys.
Yeah. I hate me too.
Anyway.
Well, Sorin's in the board.
How yeah, there's a Sorin and a dead weight in the board just for that new card smell. You know.
Does Deadweight smell new, being a reprint? I don't know how that works.
Well, it depends on which printing he's using, doesn't it?
I suppose it does.
Yeah. So, good on you, Mr. Lombardi. Now, second place, John Stern is playing green-white tokens.
I hear that's popular.
And the Menace.
This one is a thing. He's running four copies of Lamholt Pacifist in the main. And it's a 3-3 for two. That can't attack unless you control a creature with power 4 or greater. And on the backside, it's a 4-4. Just a straight 4-4.
Hmm.
So how do you feel about time-release Tarmogoyf?
Yeah, pretty much. It seems fine. He's also got... Nope, that was the other deck. Never mind. There's a Sigarda over here. Look at that. But yeah, I mean, yeah. This tokens deck just runs... A full set of Gideon, a full set of Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, and then Thraben Inspector, Hangerback Walker, Avacyn, Sylvan Advocate, oh, and the Lamholt Pacifist, of course. And then Secure the Waste, because you got to have some more tokens, because more tokens. And Jermoka's Command, because why not? Seems nice and solid.
Yeah, it's Blacklist Abzan.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
It's all of the best cards that they can fit into a green-white deck, and four of them, and beat face.
You mean a Selesnya deck?
No.
Because don't we have
Abzan
names for those?
What we call decks.
Oh. Yeah, it's Blacklist Abzan, totally.
It's everything in its relation to Abzan. So, you know, I really need to look more into the lore of all of this, because it just raises more questions.
What is that?
Well, Sorin created Avacyn, right?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, what about the other main named angels on the plane? Like, say, Sigarda. Was Sigarda already there? And Avacyn brought her on board?
Or Chemical
did
X.
Avacyn create her?
No, Sugar Spice, everything nice, and Chemical X.
Yeah, okay, but in this case, then, who was Professor Utonium?
I'm going to assume it is the Thraben Inspector.
Okay. But I thought he was one of the meddling kids that... No?
Yeah, no, now you're in Scooby-Doo. You've completely screwed it up.
You've wandered about 30 years away.
Speaking of which, I think it was just like Sunday that Dexter's Lab turned 20 years old.
Yeah.
Really?
Breathe that in.
Wow,
yeah.
I'm old.
Yeah. Let's look at another deck.
Stupid Seaster. All right, so Oliver 2 playing Grixis Control. I really like this deck. It's essentially a bunch of good stuff all piled together with Goblin Dark Dwellers and get them. But it's so there's one Chandra Flame color because, you know, why not? Flippy Jace, Kalita, it's Goblin Dark Dwellers, Dragon Lord Silumgar, so the gimme that one, you know, Jabba the Silumgar. And then some removal, some Transgress the Mind, Read the Bones, Radiant Flames, Ruinous Path, Fiery Impulse, Grasp of Darkness, Kolaghan's Command, Ultimate Price. Do you know what happens with all of those? The Dark Dwellers can cast them for free.
Yeah.
All of them. The Radiant Flames probably not so much.
I mean, that's not a good choice.
It doesn't do much, but everything else. So, yeah. Like, seriously, I really like this deck.
Yeah?
If I had any sort of means to play Magic, this is one that I would think about. But I only had one Jace, and now I don't have any Jace. So much for that idea.
No Jace. Yeah, the lack of Jace has kind of kept me away from Standard. Because I want to play these decks, but I'm not going to spend like $300 to $400 for Jaces that rotate in 6 months.
Huh. More on that later in the show.
Yeah, maybe. Well.
Possibly. Maybe not that specifically, but yeah.
No, not that specifically, but...
Next up, Doug Potter in fourth place, playing a more different green-white tokens.
How different is it?
Well, this one's running Den Protect Den Protector instead of, let's say, the Lamp Hole Pacifist. And Oath of Nyssa instead of, let's say, Thraben Inspector.
Yeah?
Yeah. Other than that, it's basically the same deck. But that those are two pretty big differences.
That's a significant change.
Yeah.
The Den Protector changes the dynamic.
Yeah, and the Oath of Nyssa, rather than a 1-2 that can block something and then die and maybe later draw a card, it's just go find a thing that you need right now. Seems good.
It's plus the consistency that doesn't cost more.
Yeah, plus it probably helps, you know, actually cast your two double color requirement planeswalkers a little bit.
Yeah, just as a bonus.
Yeah.
So in matches like these, or in decks like these, how often is Westvale Abbey a deciding factor?
Insofar as its ability to make tokens or its ability to turn into a big monster?
Either.
Having not played it, I can only say so much, but just from watching them, I think when you get to the later turns, this deck doesn't take as much advantage of it because it only has so many instants. So it's not like, for instance, the ones that can just go recruiting with their mana at the end of someone else's turn, it doesn't have that.
Sure.
But if you're not securing the waste and you're not Dromoka's commanding, then yeah, you do something with that mana when you pass. And if you don't have those cards, you can still kind of bluff them a bit. So I'm sure it's not nothing. I think it's more just a matter of why not. You get stuck in the long game, you have another plan.
All right.
Yeah, that seems good.
And with your Oath of Nyssa out, you aren't hit quite as hard by the lack of color production on it.
That is also true. So I have a problem.
Yeah.
It's good that you admit that, first step.
Just the one?
I have one problem that matters at this very second. I have no idea how to pronounce the name of the guy who finished fifth.
Okay, let's take a look.
It's called Josh.
Squee, it's all you.
Yeah, this is on you, buddy.
It's pronounced Josh.
All right. We have to give it a shot,
Josh, Buitenhuis?
That sounds good.
Nice. That's, okay.
I could not have done
it's
that.
It's probably wrong, but I mean, it's a shot.
Ship it. Yeah, love it.
I mean, I didn't actually watch any of the coverage, so I got nothing.
Well, I'm going to call you Josh.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, he's playing white-black control, and this is another deck that I really like.
Like, realistically, if I were playing, I'd probably play something more like this, because aside from not having to deal with the Jace, these are all things that I want to do in a deck.
Yeah, so he's got, actually, I don't know if I would rather play this or the later place version, but we'll get to that. So he's running two Gideon, two Kool-Aid Man Reignited, and one a new Sorin. And then he's got the Eldrazi Displacer, the Wasteland Strangler, the Thought Not Seer, and Kalitas.
He's effective.
I mean, ever since week one of his set, he's been everywhere. And look, he hasn't stopped being everywhere.
He hasn't even taken off that head crab yet.
No, not at all. A head crab keeps him warm at night and during the day and at all points in between. And then everything else, again, it's just removal, disruption, and card draw.
Yeah. It's a control deck.
Yeah. Straight up. I do like the one-shot spatial contortion. I don't know why. Just, I guess because you can snatch a win out of nowhere by pumping a Thought Not Seer. I just like it when there's that.
Oh god, I look to transgress the mind.
I just like it when there's that very slim chance of that making a difference.
Yeah.
And he's also running, Seagate Wreckage. Wow. I wonder if that ever mattered ever.
Huh.
I mean, it also makes colorless mana for his, Thought Not Seer and I guess Facial Contortion.
Yeah, Seagate Wreckage feels like something that you would put in the board when you expect the game to go crazy long. It doesn't feel like it would be in a deck that would also have Read the Bones.
Yeah, and Obnixilus.
Yeah. But then as long as you just, you know, if you go to the late game and you just dump your hand each turn, then great.
Yeah, and because you need, okay, so let's suss this out real quick. Because you need the colorless mana, it's not like it hurts you too much.
Mm-hmm.
Plus what, let's see. Ooh, okay, he has quite a few double black, sources, including one on four with Kalitas, one on three with Ruinous Path. Okay, so maybe it hurts a little bit, but
Well, he's got 16 ways to make black mana.
True, true. And then, you know, again, in the late game, it's just insurance in case things go wrong. You can just have it sitting there on the board already. So let us know if we're completely off base here.
Hey, I mean, and
we
also,
are, but still.
Let us know if Blighted Fen's ability has been important in any games, like in any, I'm sure there's been a game somewhere where it was like, oh yeah, my opponent was all in on that one creature and I totally used Blighted Fen.
You mean
Fen.
That Ojutai you can't touch?
He was totally, totally sad. But I'm just wondering how often this actually is important. It's a nice ability.
I would wager it has a lot to do with those Ojutai that just wreck decks otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, I bet it depends on how often you run across a big dragon you can't kill. Nice. Okay, well, what's next? Bradley Robinson playing mono white humans, and this is the, low curve, balls to the wall, hit you until you stop moving and then hit you some more just in case deck. The one that's running two copies of Griff's Boon in the main. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
The one that's running 19 planes and that's it. With one Westvale Abbey in the board because it's funny. Actually, I really like the board in this deck. Because it's got two more Gideon, a Bygone Bishop, that.
Which is great.
That alters the deck. Three Vryn Wingmare, which again alters the deck. The Hanwyr Militia Captain.
Two more Griff's Boon.
Two more Griff's Boon. It's weird. Like the board allows you to put the brakes on a little bit without changing the core of the deck, if that makes sense.
What I really like about this deck is that the main board has no instants. And think about that. You just pass to your opponent and rely on the strength of your deck to just get you through.
Well, yeah.
And that's just, there's a remarkable amount of satisfaction when that actually works. And there's a remarkable amount of frustration when it doesn't.
That's true.
Like having done the thing where I've done limited decks where I just don't have instants because that's not what I open in my sealed pool in those colors. And so past the turn is like, well, I guess I'm going to go get a smoothie. Let me know when I need to block.
So I just noticed something. These deck lists are not in order.
Oh, did they get mixed up after all? I only checked the first five or so.
Yeah, that's where it messes up. Sixth place is actually Brett Tetley, who is running the other white-black control deck. And this is the one that I actually liked a little more. He's running three Gideon, three Obnixilis, two Sorin. His only creatures are three Kalitas. He's running Planar Outburst and Anguished Unmaking all over the place. Let me go.
Oh, I like this one more now. I love running decks where I can just have, you know, four or so board wipes. Like, oh, look at that. Three Languish, two Planar Outburst. All right, we got this. Yeah. I'm in.
And you do got this.
Especially when your late Planar Outburst might actually do something. It kill everything says, and land.
It also says it's 61 cards, which is weird.
Huh.
22, yeah, that's 61. Okay.
That's how you get around those mill decks.
Yeah, so this one is lighter on creatures, obviously, heavier on planeswalkers and removal. And possibly land. Let me go look. Okay, it's running one more land. It's not running Seagate Wreckage. And it's not running Blighted Fen, because it's got five board wipes. It doesn't necessarily need those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I like this one a little more for me personally. So okay, that means hang on, scroll. That means that Bradley Robinson that we just talked about with the mono white humans is in seventh, and Michael Shang is in eighth with Naya tokens. And it's not really Naya tokens. It's green white tokens with two Chandra Flame color. And that's it. Oh, and there's a Radiant Flame. There's Radiant Flames in the board. But other than that, it's basically the same deck. Avacyn, Hangerback Walker, Sylvan Advocate. It is running one Stasis Snare to go with the Oath of the Four Oath of Nissa. It's got Declaration in Stone and Tragic Arrogance. Okay, so it's not just the same deck with more different things. Green white tokens. Yeah, John Stern isn't running any of that. And neither is Doug Potter. Okay, so yeah. Interesting. So like I said, it's not just the green-white tokens deck with some red splashed in. It's actually been switched up a bit. Are you guys still here?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah. I'm just looking over the list and trying to figure out how Tragic Arrogance actually works in the deck.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is an odd one.
I guess just the usual deal of I'm running four Hangerback Walkers, so why not? I mean, that's probably enough.
Possibly. I'm not going to lie. Tragic Arrogance has always been sort of a what for me anyway, so.
Well, I always thought it was like that until I actually saw what happens when someone has, you know, Hangerback Walkers and stuff like that out. But still, it's just sort of interesting.
Well, ideally your goal is to select for them something that counts in multiple categories by selecting that thing more than once, right? So, like, if they have a Hangerback Walker, you can choose it for artifact and for creature, and they sacrifice all their other stuff.
Right.
Poor Hangerback Walker. So, yeah, that was your top eight.
Okay, then.
Yeah, hell yeah.
You know what I love about this top eight? It really goes to show that you can totally make standard viable decks that don't need mythics or planeswalkers.
Yeah.
That's a joke. Don't write in. It's that they've all got planeswalkers. I mean, sure, one of them's only running one, and that was the exciting part.
Which one is only running one?
That was Bradley Robinson's.
You realize that Kithian is Gideon, right?
No. Yep, you're right. Okay, he's running four. I'm sorry. I missed Kithian. Sorry, Kithian.
Let's see. Running through some more of the top, past the top eight, we had a cutthroat deck.
I was wondering where those were.
A Bant Company deck. Whoa. Four color rights. What is this? Rites. Oh, it's Cryptolith Rite and Collected Company just with a fourth color added in.
Oh.
So what is that fourth color? It must be black. Oh, there's a Cutthroat.
Yay.
And a Catacomb Sifter. It's a weird hybrid of a company deck and a... Okay, moving on. More green-white tokens. More Cutthroat. Another Grixis Control deck. Yeah, pretty similar. What is this? More green-white tokens. More green-white tokens. White-blue humans.
What?
Which is the version that adds... Where am I looking for? Reflector Mage, that's the one. And then Ojitai's Command. So it slows it down just a little bit.
But no Jace.
I also can't help but notice this top 16 is in Spanish.
Isn't that exciting?
Well, the 9 through 32 deck lists, I see, like, lista de deck estatisticas.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you guys sing that too?
Yeah, Ordinar por Vizial Garal.
Wow, no, nice butchering language there.
Hey, it's not a language I learned.
That's true. More green-white tokens. White-blue humans, okay. What is this? More Bant Company. I think I'm seeing the Brood Monitor combo. What is that?
Ooh, something to slowly speculate about and drive everyone crazy is what it is.
Wait, what?
This is the four color rights deck. I just don't know why it's called Brood Monitor combo.
Well, it's got Brood Monitor. Huh?
The Zulaport Cutthroat, maybe? That's not much of a combo.
Yeah. Let's
see here.
Interesting.
Can we recur it?
Well, you've got a Cryptolith right in there, so you know there's going to be some mana nonsense. Next step is to look for the untapping effect.
Which there doesn't appear to be one.
What?
Yeah, I don't see anything that untaps things. So let us know what we're missing there, because there's another one right under it. It says four color rights, but I just don't know why the one above it is called Brood Monitor Combo. I'm not seeing it myself. More of the same.
Displacer.
Is there a Displacer?
Yeah. So you pay your 3 mana to exile another creature, blink it back in with the Brood Monitor.
Oh,
brings
okay.
Back 3 more dudes.
There you go. Good eye, sir. That's dirty. And I'm not seeing any... Oh, here's a... No, that's the same deck. I'm not seeing anything else new in the rest of the top 32. Oh, here's a white-blue Eldrazi. There you go. All the way down in 31th.
Okay, so this is... Wow.
What?
So you just keep doing it over and over and over again. You're doing the one damage every time?
Okay, so what you do is your Brood Monitor comes with 3 tokens.
Yeah.
You sack them, draining your opponent for whatever with the cutthroats, and then spend the mana to reblink the brood monitor, repeat they're dead.
I assumed you were somehow using them to tap for mana using cryptolith.
Yeah, I thought so too. Okay, and I'm like, wait, that's way more complicated. These guys come with a death condition.
Right. Yeah, okay. No. Oh, I like it. This is interesting.
That's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, that's pretty baller. All right, then. So that's the GP. Nothing else really to see here. Standard is, I wouldn't say wide open, but it's pretty wide open. Like, it's, there are how many viable decks that we've just rattled off? Like, 10 or 12? Is that right?
We've got some variety here.
Maybe not quite that many. I can't count. I mean, we had, okay, I'll call it 6 because the black-white control decks, while they are very different, they're really not different enough to be different decks. So we had 6 in the top 8, and then, what, 3 more in the, I'm gonna cough.
Oh, he muted, didn't he?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
There are 3 or 4 more different archetypes in the, top 32, so, 9 or 10 viable decks, that seems good.
Yeah, I don't see our weird Dark Petition combo deck from the, Pro Tour either.
Yeah. I saw people tweeting that the season's past deck was actually bad.
I could believe that.
And I get the feeling that if you know it's coming, it's probably bad. Or at least not great. But, you know.
I mean, reloading your hand is awesome, but if you die before you can start recasting it, then you died.
So how about that?
Yeah.
So let's move on to Toronto, shall we? No, that's where we just were. Let's move on to Milwaukee, shall we?
Milwaukee.
Head south.
Milwaukee, which is where Star City Games was.
Do we want to mention that other thing in between these things with the thing here? Do we want to mention that?
Why are you acting like we're bugging you during some kind of sting operation?
So apparently, face-to-face games did a damn good job with Grand Prix Toronto.
Yeah, I didn't know if we wanted. Sure, we're gonna go there. Great. Yes. So usually when we report such things, it's usually, hey, everybody's angry about all the terrible things that happened at said event. No. This time we're hearing good things.
Yeah.
My understanding is that this was face-to-face's first GP.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I have been led to believe by comments. I cannot verify that, but. So first time around, and they apparently did a bang up job. So hopefully they'll get a chance to do more.
Yay.
Hopefully.
I appreciate people doing a good job and actually getting credit for it.
Unlike this show.
Throws off that giant bias we have that everything is always terrible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I was busy thinking that everything is always terrible.
I just wanted to tell you both. Good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah. All right. I'll allow that.
Okay.
So. Like I said, Star City was in Milwaukee doing the Modern Open.
Indeed.
Where Joseph Presnell took the whole thing down with an Abs and Company deck.
Gasp and amazement.
Which, I mean, this, what were we calling it? Podless Pod? This is Podless Pod. With Abs and colors.
Yeah.
And yeah, works well. There's another one in fourth, Andrew Main. Another one in fifth, Andrew Tenjum. And more further down, I'm sure, but I'm not scrolling that far. Next up, Joe Lissette was playing Green Red Tron, which apparently did not die horribly from the banning of Eye of Ugin, since it was just a little bit of, how do you put that, late game consistency, I guess? Mid to late game consistency?
I mean, the deck's already fully capable of cheaty mana things. It was just a nice cherry on top.
Yeah, well, I mean, it lets you go find a thing you could then cast.
Yeah.
For when you ran out of things to cast, which was nice. But, like I said, it looks like it wasn't entirely necessary, because, oh, look, it finished in second.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
With the World Breaker.
Well, I mean, yeah. Because apparently that's kind of stupid. Completely stupid.
There is that.
Plus, it's still running 4 copies of the Death Star, so you gotta love Karn.
Pew pew.
I'm going to sneeze.
I guess technically because Karn costs 7, it's less pew pew and more just pew.
Bwom.
That's what Ugin says.
I always thought of Karn as being more like boom, like that.
Now I'm imagining Karin doing the NBA Jam bit, and that's amazing.
Karin goes, "Boom, zonga, zonga." Okay, so third place, Jory White is playing Burn.
I respect that.
This is sort of Burn. This is like Zoo Burn.
Ooh.
Are you guys seeing this? Like, it's Goblin Guide, Grim Lavamancer. Hey, remember that card? Monastery, yeah. Swift Spear, Wild Nacatl. Remember that card? Eidolon of the Great Revel, and then Burn Spells. Interesting.
Yeah, it's like some Naya Burn.
Yeah. Naya Zuburn.
Zuburn.
Zuburn. All right, we covered fourth and fifth. Matt Stanky is in sixth place. Is it open the damn link? What are you?
Yeah, Blues, were you having? Grow up. Grow up. I've been having problems with Star City's site in my browser here.
What? No, this is my mouse.
Oh, okay.
It's sixth place. In fact.
In fact, thank you for finishing my sentence because I'm stupid. Yeah, there's not really anything going on here, is there? I don't know why I was trying to open the link because it's in fact. It looks the same.
Remind me, did it use slip through space?
Before? Yeah, there were two of them. There were two of them.
Okay, I thought so, but it's just an interesting thing. Like, oh look, we found another way to be unblockable. Now we get a card.
Okay, now here's a deck I wanted to talk about. Seventh place, Will Drescher in Death Shadow Aggro, which it's just like Suicide Zoo. Like, this is a very strange deck.
Suicide Zoo is my Ramones cover band?
That's kind of dark.
That's pretty dark, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's
like some British comedy over there.
Yeah. Are you on the BBC Clues? Damn.
He's on, like, BBC Three at this rate. That's dark.
But this deck, this is so weird. Okay, so it's running Wild Nacatl and Step Links and Taylor Swift Spear. All right. And Andy of Carol Keep, because he's awesome. So we've got that. But then it's running Death Shadow, which means that the rest of the deck is just ways to hurt itself. So it's running a set of Street Wraith. It's running a bunch of Phyrexian mana cards.
Yeah, that's Probe, a given.
Mutagenic Growth, Dismember, and Apostle's Blessing. Not to mention every land in the deck hurts you in some way. Wait. Was I right? Every land in the deck hurts you in some way, because they're all either fetch lands or, oh no. Chalk lands. There we go.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's running Embiggen, damn it, Become Immense, Lightning Bolt, Might of Alara, and Teemer Battle Rage. So it's this bizarre mix of, like, zoo creatures, infect spells,
well,
and Death Shadow, just as that.
And when you look in the board, it's running, you know, even more Phyrexian mana. And, like, Thoughtseize for the obvious reason, but it's taking advantage of the losing two life on Thoughtseize, and that's just wrong. That's not supposed to be a good thing. Also, one Traverse the Ovenwald, because go get what you want.
Yeah, it seems fine. So, yeah, this deck is a trip. I kind of wish... I might have to pull up some of the coverage and watch this deck in action, because it looks like it would make my head hurt too much to actually play, but I would love to watch someone else play it, you know?
I'm just imagining it sort of plays out like a Sith Lord who's just telling you to give into your hatred and attack it.
Good. Let the hate flow through you. Young Skywalker.
Okay. I need you to strike me down.
And then in eighth place, Joshua Carlson is running Jund with, Jund cards. Okay.
Yeah. Turns out Jund is still the best cards in those colors.
How about them apples?
Kalitas can come too.
Moving on, there's more Infect, more Tron, there's Escape Shift, a Kiki Cord, Jeskai Flash. You guys know what I'm not seeing? Sword of the Meek anywhere. Not at all. Jund Merfolk, Grixis Control, Decepticons, Blue Moon, Tribal Zoo. No way! Yep, Tribal Flames, bringing it back, old school, get in there, Eric Vandenover. Yeah, that guy.
You know the one.
Oh my god, look at this. This is awesome. Gore Clan Rampager, Siege Rhino, Snapcaster, Goyf, Wild in the Coddle, Geist of St. Traff, that flavor of Geist.
Looking at someone from the vault list.
And Tribal Flames, just for that last little bit of damage. Or a lot. Yeah. I like it. Hey, look, there's goblins in 22nd. It's running 4 Goblin Grenade. Oh, yeah.
How do you run less?
Well, usually it's no Goblin Grenade.
Well, that's wrong.
Oh, man. I like this. Okay, wait. Hang on. I'm confused. Okay, the Goblin Bushwhacker is the one with Kicker. The Reckless Bushwhacker is the one with Surge. Okay, got it. Right. I saw too many Bushwhackers, and I was confused. Too many Bushwhackers? Is that a cover band?
No, but that phrase doesn't make any sense, actually. I'm going to need you to try again.
Sorry. Oh, what else? We've got a Living End deck. Michael Aerosmith? Is that Scary Judge Michael Aerosmith, or is that a more
He's
different
not
Michael Aerosmith?
Scary.
Well, he's and scary I, looking.
I don't know which Michael Aerosmith this is.
I don't know, but...
There might be more than one.
There might be. But he's running green, white, hexproof, so that seems like a thing he would do. Exactly. Oh, here's a red, green Valakut deck. Wait, what's red, green Valakut? Oh, it's not. What? It's running prime time. Look at this.
Of course it's running prime time.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not a scape shift deck, which is what you'd think, you know, seeing Valakut. Oracle of Moldiah, fair. Primeval Titan, Sakura Tribelder, remember him? PN Karen Nalar, Summoner's Pact, Through the Breach. Oh my god, Through the Breach with Primetime is hilarious. Oath of Nissa, Anger of the Gods, Farseek, Search for Tomorrow. Wow. This is shenanigans, but not like, this is Scapeshift if you try to play it straight. Is that even possible in Modern? Wow, okay.
I like the Tireless Tracker in the board too. In case you somehow started to run out of cards with all that land that you have.
Huh.
Let's get some more cards.
You know, because cards.
I mean, don't you love it when Farseek is effectively a cantrip?
Yeah, seems good. Wow.
Yeah, it's just like an oddly straightforward Palakut deck.
Yeah. Which I've never seen before.
I would be curious to watch the playtesting to see how you edge out Scapeshift for this.
There's also a Mono Blue Turns deck, you know, just in case you really want to punch your opponent in 31st.
Well, it's important to help them not eat lunch.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's Modern. How many people were playing Modern? By the way, we didn't say there were 1,727 people playing Standard in GP Toronto, which is Toronto's biggest event, if I remember correctly. And Milwaukee had 616 people playing Modern, so that's pretty cool.
It's some kind of viral marketing for Civil War, don't worry about it.
But, so then there were, how many people were playing Standard? We got 107 people playing Standard. Let's see, Rob Birdsall won with Naya, what is Naya Midrange? What is this? What is mythics. This? What the hell
Look
is
Look at all
this?
These mythics! Look at them!
Okay, so this deck, I'm just going to read it off straight. Listen to this, listeners. 4 Sylvan Advocate. Okay, that makes sense.
Sure, those are great.
Yeah, 2 Nissa Vastwood Seer, and then 1 each of Linvala the Preserver, Dragonlord Dromoka, and Dragonlord Atarka. Okay, let's go over to spells. We've got 2 Secure the Waste, okay. 2 Oath of Chandra. Really, that's weird. 4 Oath of Nissa. I'm sorry, what? 4 Declaration in Stone and 3 Radiant Flames, because you're clearly in 3 colors, so that's fine.
I mean, you know, Oath of Nissa and Oath of Chandra is perfectly serviceable by themselves. You don't need to run any Planeswalkers to make them good. It'll be fine.
Yeah, so he's running, speaking of Planeswalkers, there are 2 Arlan Kord, 2 Chandra Flame Color, 2 Gideon Allies Zendikar, 2 Nahiri the Harbinger, and 2 Nissa Voice of Zendikar. Are you serious right now? He's running 12 Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
If you count Flippiness, which I do.
You should. This is like when you pick up the glass case in your local game store and you smash it and then you take out 40 cards and then you grab some lands and you just go with it.
We do not advocate doing this, by the way.
Well, yeah, no, you'll hurt yourself.
So yeah, that's.
This is like the opposite of a pauper deck.
It's bizarro pauper.
It's like a prince deck.
Get it?
Oh.
Like what's not rare in this deck? The basics and Evolving Wilds. Yeah, that's exactly it.
I guess if you're willing to wander over into the mostly gold card sideboard, you can find two Angelic Purge and a Root Out. Otherwise, it's all rares and mythics.
That's pretty funny.
I'm imagining this person is drinking, like Code Red Mountain Dew out of a chalice while they play.
It's a pimp chalice.
Obviously.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's a fun looking deck.
Yeah.
And I imagine the opponent are just like, wait, what do all those planeswalkers do?
Man.
Let's see here. Nope. I was going to say, I'm hoping that he's running the Evolving Wilds from the Dragons of Tarkir Dragon Fury game promo. But even those, yeah, they're outclassed by, I think, the foil Rise of the Eldrazi ones.
Huh.
So.
We'll just assume that's what he was running.
Was there a Zendikar Hidden Treasure of Evolving Wilds that I don't know about?
Pretty rough.
Ugh. So let's see. Running through the top eight real quick, there's a red-green ramp, a white-green humans, a green-white tokens, a mono-white humans, a green-white tokens, a green-red ramp, and a black-green, I'm not going to call it a risk grid, it's cutthroat deck.
All right.
Hey, look, piloted by Emma Handy, who is formerly a card confidant's author. Now she writes for Think Gathering Magic, I think. Hey, look, here's a red-white goggles deck. I was about to say, you guys remember the goggles decks? Man, those were fun. Oh, there's one. Okay, well.
Oh, no, the goggles, they do nothing.
Yeah, apparently they only do a little bit.
Yeah, but they also do a lot in the right turn.
There's one in 12th and one in 16th. Although one's red-white, one's red-green, so that's...
Oh, and before anybody writes in, I was making a Simpsons reference. I'm fine with goggles.
You shouldn't have to explain this.
Yeah, I shouldn't, but just in case, I just want to...
That one even I know, and I haven't watched The Simpsons.
Oh, ever. God, I haven't watched The Simpsons in like a decade, and that doesn't...
Yeah, but that's a reference to 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even watch it then. It's just that reference is so pervasive that even I know it. Yeah, so... I guess I'm done. Yeah, we'll be done with Standard.
All right.
Hooray!
So I'm guessing that while Clues was being quiet, he was glancing at Legacy.
No, of course not. I would never do that. I prepared for the show before the show.
So you're going to be very active in our later discussion in Magic Online.
Wasn't at work all day doing stuff. No. Yeah, so hey, you know what? There were 117 players for Legacy.
That's more than Standard.
Beat out Standard. Take that, dying format. That's a saying that Standard. Never mind. So, what did we have in first place? Zach Witten was playing Grixis Delver. And you know what? Delver won. I'm not even mad. You know why? Because we're going to talk about the rest of these here. So, second place, we've got Anthony Zinni running Esper Stoneblade. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Stoneblade, popular deck. But third place, Alexander Strange. Is he a doctor? Alexander Strange is running Belcher. And I heartily approve of Belcher. Big, big fan of the Belcher. But here, in fourth place, Xander, let's go with Niazi, was running Slivers. Yes, that's right, my friends. Legacy Slivers, which if you've never seen do its ridiculousness, you should, because all the Slivers are pretty much good. And they're all basically like two mana cost. So Aether Vial, perfect for this. Absolutely perfect. I like Slivers. It's one of those decks that in Legacy I've been meaning to build for a long time. And I keep saying, yeah, I think my next one will be Slivers. Yeah, I think my next one will be Slivers. Or, man, I really ought to put Belcher together one of these days. Well, anyway. So, yeah, hey, we've got...
Is this deck expensive?
It's not super expensive. It's got Force of Will in it. Okay, it's not like crazy Legacy
expensive.
It's
like barrier of entry to the format.
Yeah. I mean, you are going to need your fetches and you are going to need, some of those expensive blue dual lands. But other than that, it's not bad. If you've already got your mana base, your Legacy mana base already built up, yeah, you can make Slivers pretty cheap. I know that's a big if. You don't need to yell at me about that either, listeners, but I'm just saying it's not. It's not like
in the grand scheme of Legacy decks, the cards that you would likely already have if you're serious about Legacy. You probably can just pick up the rest of Slivers on the cheap.
Yeah, you can audible into Slivers.
Like, most of these are commons and stuff.
Yeah. What else we got? So that was, that was fourth place. So that's four different decks. That's pretty awesome. Fifth place, Caleb Shearer is running Storm. Looks like Ant from the look of things. So that's five different decks. Nice and diverse. Looking good. In sixth place, Alexander Luke running Black Green Midrange. Now.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, exactly. So.
Why doesn't that have a funny name, Clues?
I swear it does. I just can't remember the funny name for this deck. So, this is the deck that's running, a full suite of Bloodghast, Dark Confidant, Deathrite Shaman, and Vampire Nighthawk, and four Liliana of the Veil, Abrupt Decays, Hymn to Torak, Inquisition of Kozilek. I've played against this deck, and I swear it has another name, and I just can't remember it offhand. So we're going to stick with the, you know what? If you know it, tweet it to at the Mana Pool. If you know what the name of this deck should be, because I haven't done that in a while. So
gee, thanks.
You're welcome. I'm sure you'll tag me with the first like four that come in.
Probably.
So awesome. Okay. But again, we're up to sixth place, six different decks. Seventh place is Junk. They've labeled it incorrectly here as Abzan. I don't know what's up with that.
Because it has rhinos in it.
Yeah, actually, I should mention, this looks a little weird. There's a Thragtusk in this deck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Swag
and
Tusk?
I'm not, you know, I, okay, so I was being a little, I just called it junk initially, but looking at this deck, this looks strange, honestly. I don't know. It doesn't quite look like the normal junk decks I'm used to. Something seems off. It's got to be that Thragtusk that's throwing me. I don't know. Maybe it's the Sorin Grim Nemesis that's throwing me.
Could be.
Cause Sorin Grim Nemesis, really?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Oh, I know that. It's just at six mana, I didn't know that he would make it to the Legacies.
I mean, it's kind of surprising, but on the same note, this deck is running three tops.
Yeah, so the game's going to go to time.
Not if you've got a Sorin out.
Stop the top.
Because when you can use the top to set up the Sorin, life's pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, there you don't want to play Thragtusk. You're just putting it on top. So.
Just putting it on top, yeah.
So Sorin hits him for five, and then you're like, well, now I got this stupid Thragtusk in my hand.
Does he have anything more expensive we can throw on top? No, it doesn't look like it. Yeah. Okay, so the Swag Tusk is to totally do that with. Well, anyway, again, through seventh place, hey, we are seeing all different decks. That is awesome. In eighth place, we have Blue-Red Delver. So I guess that counts. So eight different decks here in the top eight, which is awesome.
That's
weird.
I'm
a big fan. Looking just outside the top eight, we sadly have some Infect in ninth. Shouldn't ever have existed. We got Sneak Attack in 10th, but Goblins in 11th. Eh? Eh? You guys like Goblins? I know I like Goblins.
You like Goblins.
It's,
I mean, I have to.
It's the version of Goblins that, runs black for Grenzo.
Grenzo!
But you know what makes me the happiest about this whole, top eight here?
There's no miracles?
Yeah, you know what makes me happiest about this top 16?
Really?
Yeah. 12th
wow,
place Belcher, 13th Sneak and Show, Shardless Sultai in 14th and 15th, and Colorless Eldrazi in 16th. No miracles, my friends. It is a miracle.
It is truly the end times.
It is glorious, is what it is. And there you go. That's your legacy for this week.
Yay!
Deck list over.
Play Goblins.
I don't wanna.
Black green magic cards.
Alright then. All right. So, last week, with the announcements about all the bad news and whatnot, we sort of missed something. And then, we then forgot to actually mention it in the show. In the video version of the announcements about the Platinum pay cuts and all of that, at the end, there was more stuff. And what I just watched that earlier today, but I don't. It was specifically about GP Charlotte, and it was essentially a similar thing to what Pete Heffling said about GP Charlotte, where they're working within the confines of the stupid law as much as possible to make everyone feel welcome and included and all that. And they also hinted heavily that North Carolina is probably not going to get any more official events for a very long time.
Now, we want to be clear. They did not say that directly out loud. They merely said that they are taking that into account when they are scheduling for the next GP season and looking for other viable venues in the region.
Yeah, which means if they can help it, they won't be back in Charlotte and until that is that law is changed, which hopefully it will be. So, yeah, it's just nice that not only is Pete Heffling issuing a statement about it, but Wizards themselves are issuing statements about it. And not coming out and saying, but basically saying, yeah, this state sucks. We're not going back there anymore. But if you want to watch that, but you don't want to hear all the bad news, which there are annotations all over it now. They're like, for an important update about this, click here. For God's sake, click here. We're sorry. We screwed up. It doesn't actually say any of that. It just says, for important updates, click here. But if you want to watch that, it starts at 8 minutes and 10 seconds. The link, of course, is in the show notes.
Hooray.
Right. Was there anything else to say about that? That was pretty much what she said, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
It was hidden amongst all the bad news, though. So everyone was busy being blind with rage and disappointment, and they didn't actually hear that part. Or at least that was me. So, Clues, you put more things here in the show notes. What are this?
Okay, so as always in my trolling of the internet, I ran across Magic players talking about Magic, because it's what we do. So Mark Rosewater, as you know, has a official look, the amount of news sources we have to try and go to figure out where things are coming officially or not officially from WotC gets a little out of control. But Mark Rosewater has a... And on his Tumblr, he actually responds to concerns that people bring up. And there were a couple of them that made some waves. And one of them that made some waves was about card availability. I'll be honest, when I first clicked on this thread, I really thought it was about accessibility in Magic, as in for people who have disabilities, how difficult is it for them to play? It was not at all what I expected, and that's not what this thread is about. The thread was instead about having access to cards in the non-rotating formats. So, in other words, WotC is trying anytime they print a set, they have several goals, some of which are somewhat incompatible. And one of their goals is to make sure that cards that are staples in formats, that the number that are out there is enough to support the demand that's out there. And so they do, sometimes reprint things out there. And so folks have asked, hey, why aren't you guys basically what it boils down to is, why aren't you guys just printing more of these cards that we want? Why isn't there just, a big truck full of Goyfs floating around, for instance? And Morrow's
find it.
that's right. It might be near you. Morrow's response has essentially been, and some people have read a lot into this, that his comments are also referring to things like the cards on the reserved list. Or things like that.
Now, I want to be clear. When Clue says some people are reading, he means Reddit.
Yeah, I do, because that's where I found this thread.
Technically,
I don't know that is necessarily what he's getting at here, but Mark Rosewater's response to all of this is essentially, look, we understand that you want some of these cards, but printing them is a lot more complicated than just printing them. Because essentially, what do you put them out in? Do you put them into standard? Well, if we put them into standard, then what the hell happens? Do we just print a product that is from the vault, crap you guys wanted? Well, that's probably not going to work. Do we put it in a limited product? Well, that's probably not going to work too. Look, the point is, it seems like a simple thing you're asking for, but their avenues to do it are a lot more complicated than it seems. So they know that it's a problem. They know that you guys need more of these cards. They're working on it. There's only so much they can do so fast. Please be patient. Which was met with a resounding, "You're dumb. Seriously, just give us the cards." That's great. But, you know, I think there's an important grain of truth here. You know, a lot of these things that seem simple have unintended consequences, which segues nicely to the second post, which talked about reprints specifically, where someone asked, "Hey, look, the Eternal formats totally need these cards so that it's viable for someone to get into, because it's way too damned expensive to get into Standard these days. Heck, it's way too damned expensive to get into Modern. For that matter, it's way too expensive to get into Standard." I guess what I'm really saying is it's way too expensive. Mark Rosewater says, and I'll just read this whole one here. "Here's the problem. The vast majority of cards that matter in Modern that are powerful enough to be relevant in a format with that many cards will horribly warp Standard. We experimented in Theros with Thoughtseize, and it went quite badly." So there you go. Yeah, we'd all love to have more copies of these super crazy powerful cards, but when you put them into Standard, things get a little out of control. And everyone plays Abzan.
Was Thoughtseize being reprinted really like a huge mistake?
It did. I don't want to say exactly
what it did the first time around.
Yeah, I mean, surely they should have expected that, because that's what happened last time.
It's in every deck that can run it, and it makes people build their decks more carefully, because you know you're going to have the best card in your hand stripped out every game.
Yeah.
Not running black is a drawback, and that's what Thoughtseize does to a format. Considering so much of the discussion was about getting Thoughtseize into Modern Masters, it was actually very surprising that it showed up in Standard instead. I mean, I guess it resolved the problem of not having access to it, because once you put it in Standard legal booster packs, they just print a billion of them and you get them. But...
So I guess what I was hopeful was that if by putting these two links in here, that we might have a brief discussion about both of these concepts. One is people want cards, but putting them in Standard might not be the way to go. And the other one is whatever solution you come up with is going to have unintended consequences. How important is that?
I mean, I don't, it's cool not decks. Like,
swag versus bling.
It's not like, okay, Standard and Modern are expensive to get into, but it's not like you can't find the cards. Like, the cards you want are there, for the most part.
If you're in America, yes.
Right. Which I'm assuming the people that ask this possibly are? Maybe not. But okay, for the purposes of this discussion, because I don't know how card availability works outside of America, because I don't live there, the cards you want in America are here. Sometimes they're more expensive than you want to pay, but...
You mean all the times.
Okay, so all the times they're more expensive than you want to pay, but if you don't want to pay the money, then you don't want to play Magic, like, competitively. That's just how it is. It's how it's been for a long time. So when they say, "We want more cards," what you're saying is, "We don't want to pay so much for these cards," is what I hear. Now, the people asking about reprints for Eternal formats, that's slightly different, but... Knowing full well that they can't reprint the stuff that's hard to find, it's a non-starter.
Yeah.
So this sounds like people want something for cheaper, and when they can't get it for cheaper, they want to bitch about it. But then, well, I'm kind of cynical.
I was going to say, at the same time, I think there is at least some kernel of truth to some of this argument. If you look at the tier one, and I joked about it when we were talking about deck lists earlier in the Standard GP. If you look at deck lists for Standard right now, the cost of a tier one Standard deck is shockingly high right now.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's disturbingly high.
For something that has a shelf life of less than 2 years, yeah.
So how do you convince, you know, you're a brand new Magic player. I was going to say Johnny, but that's actually an archetype, and then Timmy, and that does, look, you're
Steve.
You're Steve. You're Steve. And you've gotten home, you got off the bus, and you ran up to your house, and you said, "Hey, Mom, I'm back from school. I just got introduced to this thing called Magic. It's a card game. No, it's not that kind of Magic. No, seriously. It's just, look, it's a card game. I want to play this card game. Can I have some money? I want to buy a deck. I want to buy some cards so I can make a deck so I can go to F&M. And she's like, well, sure, Steve. How much money do you need? And Steve gets out his, like, graphing calculator and, like, you know, a tome. And, okay, seriously, he just uses his cell phone. Nobody uses actual standalone devices anymore, which makes me sad because they're superior. But that's a whole nother discussion from a cantankerous old man who's had too much, you kids on his lawn.
Focus, Clues, focus.
Steve's mom stares at him and says, you can't have $500.
Exactly. It's like, oh, well, I only need, like, $250, Mom. You need what? Why don't I just buy you another Xbox so you can stack it on top of the Xbox you already have? Because that
makes
would
faster.
Actually be about the, it does. It does. They slave together. No, they don't slave together that way.
Well, I think the example that you're using doesn't really work, Clues, because the kids who are going to their moms and asking for this money are not exactly the target audience.
Okay, so then let's go to the target audience, which is, hey, you're starving college student or high school student, and you've got an after school job, or you work on the weekends so that you have money, you have gas money. Well, now you don't have gas money anymore because you're trying to buy Magic cards, which I guess might actually be just a truth now that I think about it.
Magic the Gathering is a luxury hobby.
Yes.
And the argument for upping the availability of cards is that you want it to be less expensive of a luxury hobby. And that's totally fine to want that. But you're asking the people that make money off of your luxury hobby to make it cheaper with no actual gain for them in the process. Because this is all secondary market issues. If anything, the presence of expensive cards drives people to buy more sealed product to try to open them because they don't want to spend $400 for a set of Jaces. And there's a bit of an argument for the older cards that they're not actively printing and making money on anymore. But like for the offhand example that we had before, they have no incentive whatsoever to make Flippy Jace any cheaper.
Well, I guess it kind of raises the question, and that's what I wanted to talk to you guys about, although we already know the answer from Chewy because he's cynical. What is the target for Magic? What is it that Magic is trying to be? Is Magic trying to be a hobby only for those with means, or is Magic trying to just be a fun game? I mean, if you look at, and I'm not saying those are necessarily mutually exclusive, that yes, you can have fun games that are hobbies for people who have lots of means, but still, you know, we're kind of in a way pricing a whole group of people who could enjoy this hobby. We're just pricing them right out of the market. I mean, Magic was invented as a thing that you could play in between D&D games. That's literally.
Well, you're not stopping them from playing the game. You're stopping them from playing the incredibly expensive top tier tournament decks.
Right.
It's not the same. That's like saying when you look at people who are involved in other hobbies, like let's say they play sports. You don't need super crazy athletic shoes to play a sport. You don't need to have a, you know, incredibly high-end collection of golf clubs to go play putt-putt.
Yeah.
This is just one of those things where you're going to have a high-end and you're going to have a lower-end because there's an attributed value to things. I mean, I'm not a fan of how expensive Magic is. I would be happier if things weren't as pricey. But I've also seen the excitement that people get when they pop open a card that's worth $40. And I've also seen people spend $80 on a whole bunch of packs, and then they open a $40 card and call it worth it. I mean, there's a whole lot of gambler's fallacy going on in Magic to start with. It's not a financially viable hobby. And, like, I'm concerned more on availability for parts of the world that just don't get enough product to do things. But in America, you're very unlikely to reach the point of, oops, I can't go find that card for my standard deck. It might be more a matter of, I really don't feel like I should be spending $100 for a single card for my standard deck. But if you just want to play Magic, period, then you can play Magic for nearly no money. You can just hang out on an F&M and pick up all the commons after people leave from opening their giant box and play Magic and have a great time. It's just a question of where do we expect people to be in the big scale of playing?
Yeah, and that's what I meant when I said if if you think it's too expensive to play competitive Magic, then competitive Magic isn't for you. You know, I mean, I spend virtually no money on Magic. And maybe I'm not the best example, but because I don't get a chance to play very often, but that's because the only playing that can be done, without, you know, heavy scheduling commitments from a bunch of other people is at FNM. And I'm not going to go do that because I don't have the money to buy those cards. But like, if Mike and Brian are like, dude, you want to play Magic? I'll be like, yeah, hell yeah. And then we're playing Magic and boom, that was easy.
Now, I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying. But what I'm asking is kind of a broader question. I think we can agree that the barrier to entry to competitive Magic is inching up over time.
Inching?
Yeah, I was being generous.
Oh, okay.
My question is, when has it gone too far?
It probably has already, but we can't really stop it.
When I first started playing Magic, it was around the time of the, I guess the standard at the time was just the dawn of Lorwyn. It was at the, I'd played with older cards for years, but I didn't start buying product myself until then. And so one of the things that I noticed was at the time, my single copy of Thoughtseize ran for like $20. And that was crazy. The concept of having this card that I just opened that was worth $20 was insane. I mean, there were probably bigger, more flashy cards around. I mean, that was when Planeswalkers were new, but I didn't remember a deck costing that much money in Standard. It could just be because I was new and I wasn't really looking as closely as other people were, but yeah, the cost of a Standard deck has gone crazy over years. But on the same note, it hasn't reached a point where people stop playing it. It's going to be one of those carrying capacity economy things. Like, when people stop playing it, then it will get cheaper. What's happened is the game has grown, and on the back end of the Wizard side, they have a sliding scale of cost benefits analysis that says we will make the most money if the average amount that people are paying is at this spot and the amount of people that are playing to give us that amount of money are at this spot. And it's just a moving line. I don't really think there's a solution short of simply, if this is more than you want to pay for Magic, then stop playing and Standard and just have fun with your friends, or get people together and play Pauper or something else instead. And then if enough people did that, yes, things would get cheaper. Also, you just have to acknowledge that Magic is an attrition hobby. Like, people can't sustain that kind of hobby cost on average over time. So Wizards is finding out how much they can get out of you. But realistically, when I started playing, there were only three sets a year too. It was a big one and two small ones. And then every other year they'd have a core set, which you didn't really have to buy. So the amount of money that Magic asks of you has gone up drastically over time.
Yeah, now there's a big set, a small set, a big set, a small set, a summer set, another summer multiplayer thing, some sort of other things throughout the year, two dual decks, a partridge and a pear tree, attrition tax, luxury tax. It's insane.
So there are several points that you you brought up there that I totally want to get to and want to hit. But before that, there was a solution that was, of course, proposed in the Reddits that I want to directly address head on and just say seriously, no, what the hell? Anytime the cost of Magic cards comes up as a discussion topic, one of the things that invariably occurs in a discussion forum is, oh, well, why don't you just buy counterfeits from China? If you're going to go ahead and just play at the kitchen table anyway, and you want to play with these cards, look, you can like get Liliana for like $2. Why don't you just do that? No, just no, that does not benefit anyone except counterfeiters in China. That is it. That is the only people that benefits. Now, you can argue all you want that Magic cards are too expensive and that Wizards isn't printing enough to meet demand, or that the reserved list is killing off the format that you love. You can argue all those things all day long, and there are viable discussions to be had about those topics. But the idea that the only way to fix this is to buy counterfeit cards is just dumb. When you're buying counterfeit cards, what you're actually saying through your dollars, what you're saying is, I love Magic so much that I want the people who make Magic to go out of business. That's what you're saying when you do that. Because there will come a day, there absolutely positively will come a day sometime down the road when you cannot tell real cards from counterfeit cards at all through any test. When that day comes, it will not be worth Wizards' time to actually make cards. They will kill off all old formats, they will only make money off of new formats, and the only game that you will have is Limited, or, even worse, all you will have is MTGO, more on that later. And if that's really what you want, if what you really want to have happen is that everyone out at WotC is out of a job except for MTGO, then fine, go ahead and buy your counterfeit cards. But otherwise, that is just a dumb argument, and cut it out. Stop encouraging people to do that because it's stupid. It's counterproductive, and it doesn't help anybody. So there, there's that. Now that that out of the way, the idea of Pauper, I love the idea of Pauper, except that there are some problems with that. For instance, did you know that Path to Exile is now a $12 card?
Path to Exile was always a good card.
Oh, it's always been a good card.
I wonder that it was a common.
It's just that it's $12. Now, don't get me wrong. That to everybody out there who's like, oh, pff, I play Standard. I've got like four copies of Jace. Yeah. Look, we're talking about Pauper here, right? Pauper is supposed to be, I can go through the change that's in my car and I can play Pauper. Yeah, there are quote unquote Pauper staples that there aren't enough of because the prices are still high, which is part of what led to these discussions that Morrow had to answer. Magic being an attrition hobby, I absolutely agree, and I don't think enough people acknowledge that, and I also don't know, I'm not saying that's not necessarily where we should be, but Magic is absolutely positively an attrition hobby. Eventually it becomes too much time, too much hassle, too much of a drain on money and resources, and people stop. They've said from market research studies that the average time a Magic player is involved in Magic is 7 years. There it is. Have you been playing for 7 years? If so, you've beaten the average. Way to go. And then lastly, the point that was raised is something that I've been curious about for a while, and I think I know my answer to it personally. Do we have set fatigue? Is there just too much product being released every year for us to keep up? And at what point do the hardcore fans just kind of go, eh, that's too much to keep up, and now I'm just going to fall into that attrition category?
I think one of the biggest problems that people run into with most hobbies, and it's especially true with Magic, is not understanding that not every product is for you. Like, I love drafting. I have no desire to buy tons of Conspiracy every time it comes out. I love playing with Commander decks, but I don't buy all of the Commander decks that they release anymore. You just sort of start prioritizing things. And having a lot of products out there that aren't necessarily for the heavy-duty collector, like maybe a lot of people just want to play dual decks. That's not a problem. When you have the obsessive need to have everything all the time, yeah, you're going to burn out pretty hard. But I don't really think it's a super issue, but I do think the fact that something that people are going to find more over the next few years especially is just how significant the new rotation cycle is going to be on the cost of Standard. Because there will be cards that you will purchase, and then 13 months later they will rotate out. And that was always the case for the last set of the year. But now it's going to be a case a lot more commonly.
Yeah, every other set.
Yeah. And what you're going to find is over the course of a 3 or so year period, you've bought an entire extra set of Magic that you have spent full Magic budget on, and it has rotated that you wouldn't have under the old system. And then you're going to look back on this and go, wow, I spent X amount more money than I thought I did on Magic just to keep playing in Standard. And that's going to get rough, and some people are just going to get tired of it. But on the same note, other people will come in and appreciate the fact that they don't have to buy cards from a year ago to hop into Standard. They'll get a few knowing that rotation's coming, and then soon they'll be up to where they need to be. The game itself will keep going, and all of this will keep happening, but honestly, it's not a problem for the game if you go away after 7 years. It is a problem for the game if you go away and no one takes your place. or if everyone starts going away in 3 years and they can't keep up with that. Like, it's all just going to be math. But ultimately, for the issue of magic costing too much, everyone's going to decide their price point, and it's always going to be, I wish it cost less.
But that's how it is for everything, though.
Yeah.
Like, I just put gas in my car, and I wish it cost less.
See, I wish it cost more, but that's a different discussion.
You're a strange kid.
Yeah, well, I'd rather the Earth not die. Well, okay, that's a misnomer, too. The Earth's not going to die. I'd rather that climate change maybe slow down a bit. Yeah,
no energy for everyone.
Yeah, let's not even start that. okay, I know that as a podcaster,
yeah,
I have set fatigue and have for several years now. Like, I make the joke about never ending preview season because it's not a joke. Like,
it's not a joke. No.
It's never ending preview season. But personally, I don't even buy the things that are targeted directly at me anymore. Like, even when
what do you consider targeted directly toward you?
Well, like the commander decks and the dual decks were the things that I always bought.
Yeah.
Because they're the things that I desperately love and I think they're awesome. I haven't bought the last, I don't know, 5 dual decks, and I didn't buy any of last year's commander things. Part of that was due to massively being broke. The other part is due to not having anyone to play with. So, you know, there's that.
I feel you, man.
But, even before I was massively broken, before I had nobody to play with, I slowed down on buying them because, So I don't know. I think there are a lot more things going on than just set fatigue. Like, for me, my personal life has a lot to do with how much magic I don't buy.
Yeah, that's completely fair. I feel the same way.
Yeah, so.
It's a demanding hobby.
My God, is it?
Like, even ignoring all the podcasting stuff that we do, and even if you aren't one of the people that watches things online or keeps track of set releases and spoilers and stuff, if you actually play, this is using up time and lots of it. And if you are buying cards, then obviously it's using up time and money and potentially travel time if you don't have something local. Like, it's a very deep hobby if you let it be. And if you're just like some of my friends who just get together once every 3 or 4 months, they dig out the same pre-built commander decks and they just play. They're perfectly happy Magic players. They don't play often enough that it's an issue, and they don't get tired because they've gotten years of play out of the same commander deck since they only play one game every few months.
Yeah.
And they're perfectly happy with it. And then when new commander decks come out, they're like, maybe someday I'll want more cards. But right now I haven't even seen all the ones I've got.
When I went to MagFest that one time so many years ago, I met a group of people who only played Magic at MagFest.
I can believe that.
And I was like, that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, my friends who play the Commander, they just play it at like people's birthdays or just like as an aside thing. They won't even finish the game sometimes. They might just play for an hour or two, talk and drink the whole time. And then when they're done, they're done. They don't even care who wins. They just want to play and see what happens. And that's how they do Magic. And they're perfectly happy with it.
I've had nights like that.
When it comes to people who are going to go online and complain about the cost of Magic cards, they're the people who think they should have all the Magic cards. And they think they should be able to have them without investing a gratuitous amount of money in all the Magic cards. And there's not really going to be a lot of scenarios that appease them without gutting Wizards financially. So.
And to be clear, those people really are the minority of Magic players.
Yeah.
Alternatively, as a pro tip for people, if you really want to get the Magic cards for the deck that you want to play in Standard, stop buying sealed packs. Like, all of the pros and all of the people that are really serious that I've ever seen will buy enough to play Limited, or they'll buy their one box or whatever. And then the rest of it, they just buy the singles of exactly the cards that they need. We have a massive gambler's fallacy of assuming we're going to open the 4 mythics that we need to fill in one of the card slots of our deck.
Spoiler, you're not.
Out of these 6 packs, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could have like 3 mythics. But it's just one of those things. If you're legitimately 100% looking at it as finance, just spend the $400 on the deck. if you like having fun with all these cards and you want to open a pool and have cards and play them and trade them and play that aspect of it, go for it. It'll be great. But ultimately, you have to decide what you want to get out of the game and how much you want to invest in it. And that's not something that Mario can help you with.
Not so much.
And perhaps the greatest beauty of Magic is that it is many things to many people. And so you can kind of decide where you belong on that scale.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's weird. I love Magic. I love Magic more probably now than I have in a very long time. And I don't play Magic.
You know, Chewie, I used to make fun of the fact that you guys didn't play Magic very much, even though you talked about it all the time. And then you got me on a podcast.
Yep.
And now I'm one of you.
Same here.
It's weird how that works.
Okay, to be fair, Clues, you moved to Michigan. That's why you stopped playing Magic.
I did. That is
true. Also, you became a judge, which meant you weren't allowed to play Magic either.
That's true,
It's not that we're not allowed. It's that we're too busy. Okay, look, I know we joke about this from time to time, but to be clear, your involvement in Magic can take many forms, and the time you have to devote to Magic, as I think it was, I don't know if it was Chewie or Bill who said this earlier.
It was Bill.
That time is a resource. And the reason that, you know, judges are typically portrayed as being bad at playing Magic is because our time involved with Magic is spent not playing. We're doing stuff with Magic, but we're not playing. And so
you also admittedly spent your character creation points on puns instead.
Yeah, well, I mean, what else would you spend them on?
Free time.
Free time? Like I recognize both of these words, but not when you put them together.
I put all mine in the charm.
Oh.
I didn't have many, huh?
Sorry, charisma. Excuse me, I had to pull up the proper thing. Hey, that segues nicely into a thing.
It does?
Ooh, a thing.
Yeah, because I think we've beaten this thing to death without getting anywhere. But it was a good discussion, and hopefully people feel free to chime in on Twitter or wherever else, you guys. Let us know how you feel.
Yeah, if nothing else, I hope it got some people thinking more about their involvement.
But speaking of putting all my points into charisma...
Oh, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah!
Oh, nice.
So, you know that Wizards of the Coast owns Magic the Gathering, right?
Yeah. Yes.
They also own Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
What? And you know... Several years ago, and then
I thought TSR owned Dungeons & Dragons.
You're dating yourself.
Yeah, that's old as balls.
I know, but somebody thought that was really funny, and that was for you, man.
Well, I mean, I did, but you're still old.
Well, that was for you, Chewie.
So, you know how years ago we did, on the Maniple, we did an episode about a Zendikar-based Magic RPG.
Adventures in Zendikar.
Yeah. It was actually an April 1st episode, so, you know, take from that what you will. But then, recently, Brian decided to overhaul his system. He made up a whole system for this, by the way. He didn't rely on anything that already existed. I'm just saying. He overhauled the system, and we did an episode on character creation, which actually made the mothership and was really popular and all that. And then Brian hit, you know, the busy time of year, so we haven't done any more, but we will, so everybody get off our backs. But, so you know how we did that and it was awesome? Well, apparently Wizards was like, hey, that's a good idea, but we don't feel like making a whole new thing, so we'll just use this pre-existing Dungeons & Dragons thing that we have. And they made a Plane Shift Zendikar, which is a – well, it's essentially a 5th edition D&D Zendikar campaign.
They took 5th edition and they built a campaign, and then apparently they adjusted some of the flavor for Zendikar, is how I'm reading it. That's probably a gross oversimplification, but ultimately, if you're interested in Dungeons & Dragons, and you obviously are on some level interested in Magic, you might want to consider checking it out.
Yep. So the link
is... Also, if you're one of the people that doesn't play 5th edition, they really want you to try. And this is a way of doing that.
Yeah, they fooled me with 4th. I don't know. I still don't.
I will spare the rant on the 4th and 5th edition and Pathfinder fiasco for another podcast.
I hear you guys saying words, but I swear it's like you're talking a weird other nerd language.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you talk about
a Diglett turns into a Doug trio.
I don't know what that means either.
Oh, okay. Well, it's how Ben Reilly was Spider-Man in 1996.
Ooh, that's awkward.
Yeah, isn't it?
Hey, speaking of Hearthstone, the new standard format is a thing, and it's awesome. Okay.
All right.
I do play that. You know why? Because I can play it without spending a single dime.
Oh, yeah.
But it does cost you time. Let's not forget that.
True, but it's enjoyable, and I can do it while I'm pooping, so I'm like multitasking.
You know, you're probably not the only person who does that with Hearthstone, and based on the amount of time I've sat there waiting for people to make a move in Magic Online, I think that's a universal problem.
Yup. I heard on some Hearthstone video or something, it's like, this guy's taking forever. You know, it's possible that he's wiping right now and he can't end the turn. And I was like, huh. You know, I've been that guy. I apologize. See, we got too serious and I had to bring it back to being crude. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how about some, I guess that's everything, right? How about some Magic Online?
Yay.
I know last week we said we would potentially touch on the judge thing and go more in depth, but there's not much to say.
Yeah, and we've spent our in-depth capital already this week on the previous discussion, so...
There's also only so much you can say about things where none of the parties are going to legally talk about it.
Well, I think what we were going to lean towards was possibly some repercussions, but we'll do that next time we have a light news week.
Okay.
Because, as I said last week, it's not like that's getting resolved anytime soon.
True enough. Save it for sweeps week.
Oh, yeah. Wait, that was last week, right? Because we had Craig Wesko on.
Oh, this explains much.
That was desperately trying to get more attention within the 48-hour window when we can have that episode. It was like breaking news Monday Night Magic.
Yeah, it was. Followed by a week late Monday Night Magic.
Yeah.
Back to our usual form.
So how about Magic Online then, there, Squeeze?
Yeah, so speaking of a week late, here's some news from a week ago. Magic Online news goes up on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so using the power of time, I'm going to ignore half the things on this list that don't matter anymore. If you're really interested in keeping up with Magic Online, go to the Wizards website and then go to Game Info Products Magic Online and look there. It's probably more current than what I'm saying right now. That said, last week's news update, which went up on the 26th of April, opens up with letting you know that the Pro Tour Gauntlet returned, past tense, April 27th. I'm only going over this now to let you know what it is. And essentially, that's a thing that they do after each Pro Tour, where they let you play with the deck lists, essentially. It only goes for a week, so you've got a little bit of time left if you want to jump in on it. Before the Wednesday downtime when it goes away. But it lets you play with one of the randomly selected decks in the Pro Tour. They're Phantom decks, so you don't get to keep the cards, but it can be kind of neat to get a chance to see what's going on. The deck list that they pulled together for this one, 13 deck lists. So it's an interesting choice, probably to reduce duplicates. I don't exactly know what the other three were, but... Suffice to say, it looks like it might have just been done on record of either the top 8, top 4, whatever, and then the 8 and 2 decks. So, cool. You can go play those between now and Wednesday's downtime. Wednesday's downtime will be an extended downtime, I think. Yeah, those take a little bit longer. So that's cool. On the same note, if you're doing any set redemption stuff, you need to get that in there pretty quickly before May 4th. Because, as usual with Redemption, when they take a week off, which will be next week, you'll get another week of delay before they can process your Redemption order, so keep that moving. Also of note, the things that I've been telling you about all year, the Modern Flashbacks, are coming back finally after being gone for the pre-release. So starting this Wednesday the 4th, they'll be bringing back Triple Time Spiral.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so if you like getting those interesting purple rarity cards from your time-shifted pool, this is the one to do it. You too could open a pack and wonder if you're going to get an Akroma or a Goblin Snowman.
Or a Squire.
Or a Squire. There's all kinds of cards. It's actually a really interesting assortment of cards from Magic's history. If you would also like to get the feeling that you're playing with someone's cube or commander, because you see practically every keyword at one point or another, and they have relatively amounts of synergy between them, this is the set for you.
Also, if you're new to Magic, you might want to skip this one.
It's not user-friendly. Yes. As I mentioned before, I came in during this time period as far as like getting product was concerned. I had no idea how to build decks in that limited format. I essentially just built them as the most basic core set kind of decks and just hope that the mechanics work together. But it's a great set. I mean, this is your chance to see a lot of the fun trivia from throughout Magic, because there's a bunch of shout outs in this set. Now, next week, they'll be adding Planar Chaos to it, so you can see all of the plane shifted cards, like, I don't know, the spell that kills all the creatures that for some reason they're never printing again. Damnation is going to be floating around in that. And then if you come back in 2 weeks, you can see all the future shifted cards, like, I don't know, some kind of green card that people kind of care about, and some other stuff that's pretty neat too. But for right now, it's going to be Triple Time Spiral, so give that a shot. I would recommend looking up an online guide for how to draft it first, because it's not going to be intuitive. But that'll be going on. So that's cool. And also, they posted the details surrounding the Magic Online Shadows Over Innistrad Championship event, the limited championship qualifiers began this week on the 4th, running through the 10th. And then the standard ones will be beginning on the 11th and running the 17th. They'll be having the limited finals on the 14th and the standard ones on the 22nd. Essentially, these are your ways of trying to power your way through all the new Shadows Over Innistrad stuff, get your neat promo cards, and do what you can to make your way to the actual championship, which will be taking place on those days I just said there. They've got a pretty nice payout in terms of cards online. And if you've never done these before, think about them kind of like PPTQs, unfortunately, where you show up for a tournament, and if you do well in that tournament, you then get to come back later for another tournament, and that tournament will have a nice prize payout. So.
Yay.
Yay. Yeah, this is pretty much, they have them for limited and standard. It's another way to play the most current set. They usually wait long enough to give people a chance to learn the set and play it through. There really isn't too much to say about that. They do these each set. It's just mainly letting you know that it starts this week at the downtime. So something to look forward to on that front. There's a link to the page with all of the costs and all that involved. Past that, there's just a link, as usual, to the Magic Online event calendar. This is probably the last time I'll mention it because it'll always be there. But if you want to keep track of all of these deadlines and nonsense, go get them. Past that, like I said, next week no downtime, so sort out whatever you need to before this downtime.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, then. Yay, Magic Online and stuff.
Magic Online still exists.
So, where does that leave us? Are we done?
I think we're done.
Pretty much done, yeah.
Excellent. Well, who wants to start wrapping things up?
I usually do, so I'll do it. You can find me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinAbob. There's no I in Goblin because we honestly could not afford it. It's a very expensive format. Past that, you can also head over to EnchantWorld.com. As I mentioned last week, I've been lining up interviews with people, the first of which I should hopefully be recording this week and posting something fancy in the next week or two. I'm shifting format to have a lead interview, and any supporting stories that are submitted, I'll tack onto it. So, content, yay. I'll be posting another few topics based on the interviews I have lined up, so keep an eye on that. I'll also be posting them on Twitter. If you'd like to submit, you can go to enchantworld.com and then click on the Share Your Story link. Go through. You can record it in the actual website if you're using your computer. If you're on a phone, you can record an audio file and just email it to planeswalker.squee@gmail.com. That'll go to me. I'll edit it in, and life will be great. Past that, I strongly recommend anyone who can go to GP Charlotte in a few weeks, because I'll be there and Chewy will be there, and we don't know when the next time we're going to get a major Magic event in North Carolina is, so it'd be great to see as many of you as we can.
Yay.
Yay.
I'll be in Charlotte.
Yeah, you can do what we're doing and not play Modern if you want. Like, I'm not playing in that tournament.
Wait, we didn't know this was an option. We cannot play in Modern?
Yeah, I'm going to show up and just talk to people. Maybe bring some Commander decks, you know, socialize, play Limited. I haven't even checked to see what artists or anything they have there. I'm sure it's great. It's going to be fun. And then if you're a podcaster, then, you know, we'll hang out. It'll be great.
I remember – I saw the list of artist stuff, but I don't remember who's on it. But I remember when I saw it, I was like, wow.
I'll look it up. Clues can talk.
Yeah. All right. Hey, everybody. If you want to get more of me, you can find me on the Random Discard Podcast, where we didn't record last week because, holy crap, it was the last week of classes and I had way too much to deal with. Speaking of which, big shout out to anyone who is taking finals over the next week or two. Good luck in all that you do. Be sure to get enough sleep. Stay hydrated. Cramming only helps so much, but sleep, oh God, sleep is so precious. You're going to love it. Trust me. You can get in touch with me directly. I am at LockLuzé, spelled just like it is in the show notes on Ye Olde Twitter. Or you can tweet to at the Mana Pool and he will hate me.
Which I'll do that anyway, so it's fine.
All right, great.
Fixed point in time.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
There's a lot of artists here.
Oh, and also, Destiny's fun again.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So we had new content and, a bunch of people came back on and turns out it's just as fun as it was. Having a blast.
Well, how about that?
Yeah. And, the Division still buggy. Holy crap. I'm not saying that Destiny's not buggy too. I'm just saying that usually ladders don't kill you except in the Division.
So there are levels of bugginess. Like there's Magic Online from 2 years ago and then there's Magic Online from now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the
I'm
record,
still entertained when your creatures attack you.
That's the Division, Magic Online a few years ago. And then
yeah.
Destiny, Magic Online from now.
Pretty much. So, hey, these artists, tell me more.
All right. So I've added a link to the show notes for the artist page because that's the neat guest part. But just to read them off quickly, starting at the top, we got Rob Alexander.
Where? Oh, there it is.
So – that's pretty cool. Get those nice lands signed, I guess.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, you could get those duels signed so that you can be fancy. So we've got Rob Alexander. We've got Jason Felix. Eric Deschamps.
Ooh.
Christopher Moeller. RK Post. Brian Wachwitz. Richard Kane Ferguson.
Nice.
Jason Engel. And Anthony Palumbo. Oh, and it scrolls more. Wow. Winona Nelson.
Oh, nice.
So that's a very nice assortment of people. If you're interested in getting cards signed or buying, you know, swag, they might even have playmats there since they're allowed to sell those now. So,
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Swag.
Also, I guess if you're planning on playing in the event, do them a favor and just register early. Everyone will appreciate it.
Yes, for the love of God, pre-register.
You'll be happier. They'll be happier. Everybody will be happier.
I'll be happier because I won't have to talk about, oh my God, did you hear about the giant mess in Charlotte? Because I did that a couple years ago and I'm good.
Yeah. We got that out of our systems pretty well.
Yeah. Oh man. So this could have been another biggest GP ever, but then North Carolina took a downturn. So let's get an estimate. Where do you think we're going to be for number of people?
At Charlotte?
Yeah. Is there a counter?
I don't know if there's a counter or not.
I don't
not.
See a counter. Okay. I don't remember how many were at last Charlotte.
I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to estimate with the modern ones. Like, with limited ones, I just assume a ridiculous number of people because people love showing up and just playing without having to do any deck building.
2870 at last Charlotte.
Okay.
Wow, that's lower than I thought.
For this one, I'm going to say... let's go, well, like, so we just killed our Eldrazi off. And so Modern is getting some breathing room. Having no idea how many people are already signed up for this, I'm going to say, let's go with 3,000. I'll be optimistic. Let's grow a little bit.
Yeah. I get the feeling that the amount it would have grown and then the number of people that aren't going in protest might even out.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, too.
But I think somewhere between like 2,500 and 3,000 is probably a good number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Plus, you know, Bill and I will be there, so that's awesome.
yeah, I mean, we'll be there. It'll be cool. We'll hang out.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Go stand over there and look at the fancy Jace holding Tomio's book with an Avison picture in it and go, yeah, that's probably something people want. All these exclusive playmats and stuff. Yeah. Remember when they used to do gold rushes?
You mean they did it twice, I think?
Yeah, but I was at one of them and it was awesome.
You got something good, didn't you?
Yeah, I got a rare. I don't even remember which one it was. It was one of the ones from Ravnica. It wasn't like one of the crazy old ones, but I think it was one of the card tutors from Ravnica.
Oh, okay.
Does that sound right? Like a black card tutor in Ravnica?
I don't even remember. I don't remember what I got it.
I didn't play back then, so my knowledge of the cards is whatever I've seen in Mike's deck.
Yeah.
When Mike uses Guided Passage, I see all these Ravnica cards that I don't want to play. They scare me. But yeah, so.
Cool.
Now that I've tangented away from Clues' statements.
Well, that's because Clues told you to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that just leaves me then. So this weekend, the game Duck Game on Steam was free to play. So I gathered up, some people and recorded some multiplayer Duck Game. Duck Game is awesome.
Is it about ducks?
It is. It's like Super Smash Brothers, but on crack. You are a duck wearing a hat because it's an online multiplayer game.
Obviously.
Team Fortress 2 dictates that you must have hats.
It is the currency of the realm.
Yeah, and they're quick fire, you know, four player, last one that's not dead wins that round and you go to the next round real quick. And it's insane. And there are weapons to blow each other up, like just ridiculous weapons spawn. And it's so much fun and frantic and insane. And I have a series of videos coming up soon that are Duck Game because
excellent.
Duck Game is awesome. I had entirely too much fun doing that. So that's cool. Look forward to that soon. Consider Duck Game. It was free to play this weekend and I was able to get the people together. It was me and Jacob, who has been a listener of mine for freaking ever. And there was, excuse me. I couldn't get to the mute button. I'm so sorry. So there's me and Jacob. There was Mike, my beardy co-host on the Mana Pool, and Billy, who is from It Might Be Gaming on YouTube. The four of us played Duck Game and it was awesome. So those will be going up, the first one in the next day or so on the YouTube channel. Let me know what you think of that because it's insane. It's youtube.com/C/ The Mana Pool. There we go. Or just search for The Mana Pool Tube. That's the channel name. Yay. Is that all I got going on? Like I said, standard happened in Hearthstone. Everybody got an old god legendary card. It's like.
Was it Karinus?
No, an old god, not a awesome god. It's sort of like the pre-release where everyone got the Ajani Vengeance, which I think might have been before your times. I can't remember when Shards came out compared to Zendikar. Oh, who'd we lose?
We lost somebody?
We lost Bill. Bill's just gone. I don't want to talk to Bill anyway.
He'll be back next upkeep.
That's true, yeah. But yeah, so at the pre-release for one of the Shards, the sets of Shards of Alara, I forget which one, the pre-release card was Ajani Vengeance. And then the launch card was Ajani Vengeance. So everybody had Ajani Vengeance. It's sort of like that, except literally everybody that logs into Hearthstone during this whatever time gets this legendary card, which means you see it all the time because it's actually pretty good. And I'm getting sick of it every single game. It's against the freaking C'Thun deck. But it's new and everybody has it, so everyone's going to try it. So it's cool. They're slowly starting to phase out. So Standard is becoming a little more interesting, finally. I get the feeling that power might have gone out where Bill is.
There's a chance of that.
Oh, no. He said his modem reset. You obviously don't have to pull me back in to wrap up. Well, yeah.
Okay.
I want to talk to you anyway. So, what else? YouTube? I opened some packs of the new set and reviewed the cards. That was pretty cool. I don't actually know what else I've been doing because I've been working on lots of things that are coming out at different points. So I don't know what's already out and what's going out soon. Okay, all that stuff is Okay, good, good, good. I'm caught up. We're good. Everyone's good. That's what's on YouTube. I'll be playing more duels as soon as I get a chance. Things have been sort of insane around here lately. What else? We did a mythic conscription of the dark on the last episode of the Mana Pool. Mythic conscription, for those who don't know, is where we look at sets from the pre-mythic rarity days and try to figure out what in there would have been mythic, if any. And the dark is really cool because it's like the third or fourth, I think it's the fourth Magic set ever. And it's actually like tonally and setting wise kind of similar to Innistrad. And it also has lots of precursors to things that we see now, like Fight and, somewhat, Shroud. There's some somewhat Shroud in there too. So it was really cool to look at those. Yeah. It's all right then. I guess I'll be done. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, that is at the Mana Pool, as you've heard several times in this episode already. If you want to send me an email, that's Chewie, Chewie, at mtgcast.com. If you want to help support what I do with all of the podcasting and the video making and all of that, then by all means, check out the Patreon. You can get Mana Pool episodes and all my YouTube videos. The vast majority of my YouTube videos early. You can get the odds and ends, if you so choose, the stuff that's recorded before and after the show proper for both Monday Night Magic and the Mana Pool. And I really do appreciate it. Also, if you want to support Magic podcasting in general, but not me specifically, which is perfectly understandable, you can sign up to support MTGCast on MTGCast.com. Because while it's completely free to all of the podcasters, and it's completely free to all of the audience. It's just free all around. It's not actually free. It costs a fairly stupid amount of money. So every little bit there helps as well to get MTGCast back in the black. Like an AC/DC song. Like Thunderstruck. He's a regent.
He is.
And I miss Bill. I'm going to try to get Bill back. Hopefully my recording won't die when Bill gets back on. I forgot about that.
It probably.
Hey. Oh, it didn't. Oh,
whoa.
Yay, Bill's back. So now we can finish. So.
Oh, are we still live?
Yeah, yes. This has been.
Oh, well, yeah. This has been. Yeah, go ahead.
This has been episode 511 of Monday Night Magic here on the MTG Cast Network. Thank you all so very much for listening, and go play some Magic. Really, Clues? You're not going to throw it in here at the end?
Disappointment.
Yeah.
Now I'm sad.
I'm sorry.
So wasted.